Once they were safely returned to their quarters in the palace at Thebes, Ramram sent slave girls with urns of hot water and bottles of perfumed unguents to bathe Taita and wash away the mud. When he was thoroughly cleansed, two royal physicians arrived, followed by a train of assistants bearing chests filled with medicine and magical amulets. On Taita's instruction, Merin met them at the door and sent them away. As the most skilled and learned surgeon in all of Egypt, the Magus is attending to his own injury. He presents his compliments and thanks you for your concern. Taita washed his wound with a distillate of wine. Then he numbed his leg with a self-induced trance, while Merin cauterized the deep gash with a bronze spoon heated in the flame of an oil lamp. It was one of the few medical skills that Taita had been able to teach him. When he had finished, Taita roused himself and, using long hairs from Windsmoke's tail as thread, stitched together the lips of his wound. He dressed them with ointments of his own concoction and bound them with linen bandages. By the time he had finished, he was exhausted by pain and filled with sorrow at the loss of Demeter. He sank onto his mattress and closed his eyes. He opened them when he heard a commotion at the doorway, and a familiar, authoritative voice bellowed, "Taita, where are you? Cannot I trust you out of my sight, but that you commit some rash folly? Shame on you! You are no longer a child!" At that, the divine god on earth, Pharaoh Nefertiti, burst into the sick room. His suite of lords and attendants crowded in after him. Taita felt his spirits rise, and the well of his strength begin to refill. He was not entirely alone. He smiled at Nefertiti and struggled up on an elbow. "Taita, are you not ashamed of yourself? I expected to find you breathing your last. Instead, you were lying at your ease with a foolish grin on your face." "Majesty, it is a smile of welcome, for I am truly delighted to see you." Nefertiti pushed him back gently on the pillows, then turned to his retinue. "My lords, you may leave me here with the Magus, who is my old friend and tutor. I shall summon you when I need you." They backed out of the chamber, and Pharaoh bent to hug Taita. "By the sweet milk from the breast of Isis, I am glad to see you safe. Though I hear that your companion Magus was lost. I want to hear all about it, but first let me greet Merin Cambyses." He turned to Merin, who stood guard at the door. Merin went down on one knee before him, but Pharaoh lifted him to his feet. "Do not abase yourself to me, companion of the Red Road." Nefertiti seized him in a hearty embrace. As young men, they had embarked together on the ultimate test of warriorhood, the Red Road, a trial of skill in handling chariot, sword, and bow. The two had been matched as a team against proven and tried veterans, who were free to employ any means, even killing, to prevent them reaching the end of the road. Together they had won through. Companions of the Red Road were brothers of the warrior blood, united for life. Until her death, Merin had been betrothed to Nefertiti's sister, the Princess Meriakara, so he and Pharaoh had nearly become brothers-in-law. This reinforced the bond between them. Merin might have held high office in Thebes, but he had chosen instead to enroll himself as an apprentice to Taita. "Has Taita been able to school you in the mysteries? Have you become a Magus as well as a mighty warrior?" Pharaoh demanded. "Nay, Majesty, despite the best efforts of Taita, I lacked the skills. I have never woven the simplest of spells that succeeded. A few even rebounded on my own head." Merin made a rueful face. "Ah, good warrior is better than an inept sorcerer any day, old friend. Come, sit in conference with us, as was our wont in those long-ago days when we were fighting to free this very Egypt from the tyrant." As soon as they were seated at either side of Taita's sleeping mat, Nefertiti became serious. "Now, tell me of your encounter with the toads." Between them, Taita and Merin described the death of Demeter. When they ended, Nefertiti was silent. Then he growled, "Those animals grow bolder and more voracious every day. I am certain that it is they who have made impure and sullied what remains of the water in the river pools. I've tried every means I can think of to be rid of them, but for every one we slay, two more spring up to take its place." "Majesty," Taita paused for a moment before he went on, "you must seek out the witch whose creatures they are and destroy her. The toads and all the other plagues she heaps upon you and your kingdom will disappear with her, for she is their mistress. Then the Nile will flow again, and prosperity will return to this very Egypt." Nefertiti stared at him in alarm. "Must I infer that the plagues are not of nature?" he demanded. "That they are created by the sorcery and witchcraft of one woman?" "That is what I believe," Taita assured him. Nefertiti sprang to his feet and strode up and down, lost in thought. At last he stopped and stared hard at Taita. "Who is this witch? Where is she? Can she be destroyed, or is she immortal?" "I believe she is human, Pharaoh, but her powers are formidable. She protects herself well." "What is her name?" "It is Eos." "The goddess of the dawn?" He had been well schooled by the priests in the hierarchy of the gods, for he was a god himself. "Did you not tell me she was human?" "She is a human being who has usurped the goddess's name to conceal her true identity." "If that is so, then she must have an earthly abode. Where is it, Taita?" "Demeter and I were seeking her out, but she became aware of our intentions. First she sent a giant python to attack him, but Merin and I saved him, although he came close to death. Now she has succeeded with the toads where she failed with the serpent." "So you do not know where I can find the witch?" Nefertiti persisted. "We do not know for certain, but the occult indications suggest that she lives in a volcano." "A volcano? Is that possible, even for a witch?" Then he laughed. "I learnt long ago never to doubt you, Taita. But tell me, which volcano? There are many." "I believe that to find her we must travel to the headwater of the Nile, beyond the mighty swamps that block the river above Kibui. Her lair is near a volcano beside a great lake, somewhere at the very end of our earth." "I remember you told me when I was a boy how my grandmother, Queen Lostris, sent a legion south under Lord Akkar to find the source of the river. They disappeared into those dread swamps beyond Kibui and never came back. Has that expedition aught to do with Eos?" "It has indeed, Your Majesty," Taita agreed. "Did I not tell you that there was a lone survivor of the legionaries who returned to Kibui?" "I do not remember that part of the tale." "At the time it seemed insignificant, but one man came back. He was raving and demented. The physicians thought he had been driven mad by the hardships he had endured. He died before I could speak to him. But recently I have learnt that before he died he told strange tales that were disbelieved by all who heard them, so they were not reported to me. He raved about vast lakes and mountains at the end of the earth, and a volcano set beside the greatest of the lakes. It is from this legend that Demeter and I divined the whereabouts of the witch." He went on to describe his meeting with the hunchback Tip-Tip. Nefertiti listened fascinated. When Taita had finished, he thought for a while and then asked, "Why is the volcano so important?" In reply, Taita described Demeter's captivity in the witch's lair on Etna and his escape. "She needs the subterranean fires as a forge in which to fashion her spells. The power emitted by the immense heat and sulphurous gases enhance her powers to godlike proportions," Taita explained. "Why have you selected this particular volcano to examine first, of all the many hundreds?" Nefer asked. "Because it is closest to this very Egypt, and it sits upon the source of the Nile." "I see now that your reasoning is solid. It all fits together neatly," Nefertiti said. "7 years ago, when the Nile dried up, I remembered all that you had told me of my grandmother's expedition, so I ordered another legion to march south on the same mission to reach the source and discover the cause of the river's failure. The officer I placed in command was Colonel Ach-Akton." "This I did not know," Taita said, "because you were not here for me to discuss it with you. You and Merin were wandering in foreign lands." Nefertiti's tone was a rebuke. "You should have stayed with me." Taita adopted a repentant attitude. "I did not know you had need of me, Majesty." "I will always have need of you." He was readily appeased. "What news of this second expedition?" Quickly Taita seized his advantage. "Has it returned?" "No, it has not. Not a single man of 800 who marched away came back. They have vanished more completely than my grandmother's army did." "Has the witch destroyed them also?" "It is more than possible, Majesty." He saw that Nefertiti had already accepted the existence of the witch and did not have to be convinced or encouraged to pursue her. "You never fail me, Tata, except when you are on a jaunt to the gods alone know where," Nefertiti grinned at him. "Now I know who is mine enemy, and I can move against her. Before, I was helpless to lift these terrible afflictions from my people. I was reduced to digging wells, begging food from my enemies, and killing toads. Now you have made clear the solution to my problems. I must destroy the witch." He jumped up and continued to pace as restlessly as a caged lion. He was a man of action, eager to take to the sword. The very thought of war had lifted his spirits. Taita and Merin watched his face as the ideas came to him in floods. Every once in a while he would slap the scabbard at his side and exclaim, "Yes, by Horus and Osiris, that's it!" At last he turned back to Taita. "I shall lead another campaign against this Eos." "Pharaoh, she has already gobbled up 2 Egyptian armies," Taita reminded him. Nefertiti sobered a little. He resumed pacing, then stopped again. "Very well, as Demeter did at Etna, you will work a spell of such power against her that she will fall from her mountain and burst like an overripe fruit as she hits the ground. What think you, Tata?"
"Your Majesty, do not underestimate Eos. Demeter was a mightier Magus than I am. He struggled against the witch with all his powers, but in the end she destroyed him, seemingly without effort, as you might crush a tick between your fingernails." Taita shook his head regretfully. "My spells are like javelins. Thrown at extreme range, they are feeble and easily deflected with a flick of her shield. If I come close enough to her and am able to discern her whereabouts exactly, then my aim will improve. If I have her in my eye, my dart may be good enough to fly past her shield. I cannot touch her at this great distance."
"If she is so all-powerful as to destroy Demeter, why has she not done the same to you?" He answered his own question immediately. "Because she fears that you are stronger than she is." "I wish it were that simple. No, Pharaoh, it is because she has not yet struck at me with all her strength."
Nefertiti looked puzzled.
"But she killed Demeter, and she grinds my kingdom between the millstones of her malice. Why does she spare you?"
"She had no further use for Demeter. I told you how, when he was in her clutches, she sucked from him, like a great vampire, all his learning and skills. When at last he escaped, she did not trouble to pursue him vigorously. He was no longer a threat to her, and had nothing more to offer. That is, until he and I united. Then her interest quickened again. Together we had become such a significant force that she was able to detect me. She does not wish to destroy me until she has sucked me dry, as she did Demeter. But she could not lure me into her snares unless she isolated me. So she struck down my ally. If she wants to preserve you for her foul purposes, I will take you with my army. You will be my stalking horse. I will use you to come within striking distance, and while you distract her, both of us will attack her," Nefertiti proposed.
"Desperate measures, Pharaoh. Why should she allow you close enough to her when she can kill you from a distance, as she did with Demeter?"
"From what you tell me, she seeks dominion over Egypt."
"Very well. I will tell her that I have come to surrender myself and my land to her. I will ask to be allowed to kiss her feet in submission."
Taita kept a grave expression, although he wanted to chuckle at this naive suggestion.
"Sire, the witch is a savant."
"What is that?" Nefertiti demanded.
"With her inner eye, she is able to scry a man's soul as readily as you read a battle plan. You would never come close to her with such anger displayed in your aura."
"Then how do you propose to draw within range without being scryed by her mysterious eye?"
"As she is, so am I a savant. I throw no aura for her to read."
Nefertiti was becoming angry. He had been a god long enough to resent any check or restraint. His voice rose.
"I am no longer a child for you to baffle with your esoteric cant. You are too quick to point out the flaws in my plans," he said. "Learned Magus, be kind and gracious enough to propose an alternative so that I may have the pleasure of treating it as you have treated mine."
"You are the Pharaoh. You are Egypt. You must not walk into the web she weaves. Your duty is here, with your people, with Mentaka and your children, to protect them if I should fail."
"You are a devious and crafty rogue, Tata. I know where this is moving. You would leave me here in Thebes, killing toads, while you and Merin set out on another adventure. Am I to be left cowering in my own harem, like a woman?" he asked bitterly.
"Nay, Majesty. Like a proud pharaoh on the throne, ready to defend the 2 kingdoms with your life." Nefertiti placed his clenched fists on his hips and glared. "I should not listen to your siren song. You spin a web with as strong a thread as any witch." Then he spread his hands in a gesture of resignation. "Sing on, Tata, and I perforce will listen." "You might consider giving Merin a small force to command, not more than 100 picked warriors. They will travel fast, living off the land without recourse to a lumbering supply train. Numbers alone are no threat to the witch. She will not be concerned by a contingent of this size. As Merin projects no complex psychic aura to arouse her suspicions, she will scry him as a bluff, simple soldier. I will go with him. She will recognize me from afar, but by coming to her, I am playing into her hands. In order to take from me the knowledge and power she desires, she must let me come close to her." Nefertiti growled and muttered under his breath as he stamped up and down. Finally, he confronted Taita again. "It is hard for me to accept that I should not lead the expedition. However, your arguments, convoluted though they are, have swayed me from my good sense." His glowering features cleared a little. "Above all men in Egypt, I trust you and Merin Cambyses." He turned to Merin. "You shall have the rank of colonel. Choose your 100, and I will give you my royal hawk seal so that you can equip them from the state armories and remount stations anywhere in my dominions." The hawk seal delegated Pharaoh's royal power to the bearer. "I want you ready to ride with the new moon at the latest. Be guided in all things by Taita. Return safely, and bring me the witch's head."